Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. We are recording the Thursday after the Miami Dolphins won their Super Bowl of the season against the Buffalo Bills to split the series of the year. And congratulations to all our Fins fans who will be sitting on their couch watching everyone else play in the playoffs. You got this one. Dan, where are your head at?
Dude, we are like, we're almost a week removed from this game as we record this. And the sauciness and the bitterness in your tone, still so appropriate. Unhappy. It's still appropriate. So yeah. It was, I posted a lot of feelings on social media. And of course, with all social media posts, sure, I'm not going to regret any of them as time goes on. But yeah, man, tough game. I will tell you this. I don't want to talk about it.
We don't have to. That could be it. We're going to leave it there.
I want to pretend it didn't happen. In fairness, though, I think we've put enough out on our socials. Mm-hmm. I think we've put enough out in kind of blips here and there on some of our channels to where people know how we feel about the game. And everyone in Bills Media and Bills Mafia knows what went wrong with it. JJ, I would like to hit a reset if we could. Mm-hmm. We're at the halfway point of the Buffalo Bills season right now. And coming off a horrible loss like that, I feel the need to lighten the mood a bit. So I kind of want to play a game with you. And for those of you listeners at home who might remember this podcast when we first started it, way back when it was Keeping the Receipts, where JJ and I, our whole shtick was kind of going through media headlines because at the time the Bills we saw as ascending, but mainstream media was doubting them. We would go through and we would literally call up headlines, call up video clips of people doubting the Bills, and then turn it back around on them. I want to kind of harken back to the days of our founding, JJ. I want to play a game with you called Halfway Headlines. So we are actually at the Buffalo Bills halfway point. They've played 9 games here with 8 left to go. And it's always fun to kind of look back on where things were at the beginning of the year versus where they are now and see kind of how some takes that have been put out there about Buffalo Bills football have aged. So JJ, what I will present to you are 5 different headlines from training camp and into the first couple of weeks of the season that are talking about a specific element of Buffalo Bills football. It could be a position group. It could be a specific player. It could be things related to player contracts. And what I want you to do, JJ, is I want you to tell me how you think that particular headline has aged from then until now, where we are midway through the season. And I actually have come up with a rating system I'm very proud of to kind of help make this succinct. All right, so I'm going to read you the headline, and you're going to tell me one of 3 options, sir. Has this headline aged like fine wine, meaning it is gracefully aged and it is a credit to its vintage, i.e., it's a really good take that has held up and gotten even better over time. Option B, it is aged like milk. Started out okay, but then turned rotten pretty quickly. This is a take, as you probably guess, that is really aged poorly and is bad. And then option C, it's my personal favorite category, has aged like Paul Rudd. There are no hints that it is in fact aged, but only time will tell. In other words, this is a take that needs just a little bit more time before whether we know it is a good or bad take. How do you like those parameters, sir? And are you ready to dive in?
I got to be honest. When I first read them, when you sent me the run of show, the like Paul Rudd and the like fine wine seemed like the same rating. Because honestly, that man he's gotten better with time, in my opinion, right?
Like, but he's in a permanent stasis. Yeah. Like, if you look, I was watching Clueless the other day, and I happened to call up a photo on my phone because I'm like, that dude looks exactly the same as he did 30 years ago when this movie came out. He has stayed the same. He has looked the same age for what feels like a quarter of a century.
And there's two ways to look at this. One is that he's a vampire and he's like just permanently youthful. The other is that he just got his smile lines when he was 25 and he'll have them till he dies. Right. Cause that's, I know what you're talking about, but I've looked at those old movies. The dude just has looked perpetually 32 for 25 years. And it started when he was like 19. So, you know, he sort of hit a moment in time and then just stuck it for a while, I think.
Which I am very envious of. JJ, if I were a headline, I would say I have aged like milk, and I would really like to prefer to age like Paul Rudd.
Me too. Yeah.
All right. All right, let's get into it, man. Yep. Headline number one. Here we go. This comes from the Democrat Chronicle, August 21st, 2025, straight out of Buffalo Bills training camp. JJ, here is the headline. Cole Bishop struggles as the Bills look for answers at safety. What is your age rating on this one here at the midpoint through the season?
We're going to go with fine wine, which you may find surprising. Because I do. I think where you might say it's a milk rating is that he has had some breakout games. He's looked like he's starting to get it. It's starting to click in, especially when he's lined up next to Poyer. But I will say what was expected of him, or maybe it's like Paul Rudd, you know, maybe not fine wine, because I don't know if it's an exact bullseye of a headline, but I don't think that it is a freezing cold take and that he is some all pro safety that has definitely come and found his own. He still makes some mistakes. I've of course watched the last couple of games, and the Chiefs game, he was outstanding, but either game on either side bye week, he still struggled. He still had some of the same things that we've seen before: failing to read the proper route, failing to provide the better leverage, failing to give the backup to his coverage players on the outside where they need it over the top. Or when they need someone to you know, kind of squish up against the edge for them to help with a streaking receiver. So with all that, I think it's going to be Paul Rudd for me, because I don't think we can say what Cole Bishop is as a starting NFL safety until the end of the season. We just got to see more consistency week over week.
I agree. I actually called this one Paul Rudd too. Yeah. There is the temptation to say like milk, because Cole Bishop has in fact splashed a lot. He's had some really high variance play, but he's hit that higher tier of the variance where he's made some really dynamic and athletic plays that have literally flipped certain drives in favor of the Bills. That being said, though, I approach this more from less the Cole Bishop side and more the Bills looking for answers at safety side. And I feel like that is spot on, because I think while they are certainly trying to find their way with this Poyer Hancock platoon opposite of Bishop that has allowed Bishop to play better, I do think time will tell if the Buffalo Bills have actually found their answer there. I actually have been advocating for throughout the course of the week, as we've been gearing up for the Bucs game, I've been advocating for Jordan Hancock to get a few more snaps. I think athletically is going to be a better matchup for Kate Otten and some of the pass catchers the Tampa Bay is going to roll out there. So I think Paul Rudd again, because this one still needs a little bit of time to tell before we know which way it is actually going to age, be it fully gracefully or be it like milk. So Paul Rudd for me too, because the jury's out for me on the opposite side of this question.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. Headline number two. I think this one's going to be a little bit easier, but then again, you could surprise me. Bills fan favorite Matt Milano returning to all pro form in training camp. This is from Sports Illustrated, July 29, 2025. JJ, How is this headline aged?
This is such rotten milk that I wouldn't feed it to my dog, and I use her to dispose of some pretty rancid things. So, this is really, really nasty. Having watched Matt Milano when he's been healthy, which is always the freaking question, this season, it looks like they've moved on 1 year too late, right? Like they changed his contract, they reduced his cap numbers for. Or they gave him kind of a pay cut, but gave him a 1 year earlier release to free agency. I don't know that he's probably going to be back on the Bills as a vet minimum deal as a depth linebacker next offseason. And people are going to hate it because I think he just looks bad. He looks slow. He does not have any splash plays. He doesn't seem to be able to get off of run fits. He had this amazing slippery ability early in his career. Of even though he was sort of undersized, he was strong enough to slice through blocks and get to, you know, the tackle. He does not seem to have that anymore. He gets stuck on guards. He gets stuck on centers when they're pulling. He doesn't seem to have the athleticism. You know, it's weird because it's like a light switch with a loose wire. Like every once in a while, you see him shoot to the sideline to take down a quarterback who's trying to flee the pocket, and you're like, whoa, that's Matt Milano. But too often he just kind of disappears in the middle. And then, of course, is the fact that he's only available half the snaps of the season so far.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is an aged like milk take. And I fell for it too at training camp. I was very hopeful that Milano was going to regain his Pro Bowl All-Pro form. I was reading the hype. I was watching some of the clips coming out of camp. I'm like, we're going to get Matt Milano back for one solid good year as we make a run here. And the reality is the sideline-to-sideline speed, as you mentioned, it flashes every now and then. But man, his tackling in the run game, when he is left in open space against a running back or against a tight end, I mean, he just gets shook. And it's really tough to watch a guy who was so underrated for so long rise to the prominence that he did and then see him kind of going out this way. I actually don't think he's going to be back next year, JJ. I actually think this is a Milano retire year. I think this could be his last year playing professional football. The toll that the game has taken on his body, I think with what he is putting on film this year, the general interest in him as an undersized, aging, oft-injured linebacker, I don't think is going to draw a lot of interest from other teams. Though I do agree with you, if he comes back, I think it's the Bills because I think it's the only team that might be in the market for his services. I mean, couple that with how Terrell Bernard is playing this season. And I was so frustrated after the Miami game. I know we said we weren't going to talk about it, but I'm going to put a piece in here. Bernard, I get why Milano is declining with his ability to shed blockers. Bernard seems to have completely lost that ability comparative to his play last season. And I've been so frustrated watching him trying to find his run fits, even watching him in coverage, because he's never had the sideline to sideline mobility that Milano has in pass coverage. So Bernard's never brought that to the table, but add to the fact that he still doesn't have that. And now he's not as effective in the run game. I looked at SpotTrack to see what are the terms of this extension that he signed with the Bills and can we walk away from him next year if need be with a minimal dead cap. I will say as a post June 1 trade or cut, it is far more palatable to walk away from Terrell Bernard based on the numbers I'm seeing on SpotTrack and over the cap. And you know what? I'm kind of entertaining the idea. It's crazy to think that we've gone from this headline to are the Buffalo Bills resetting their entire linebacker room next year?
Well, I think that, and you know, to be honest, I think that that's the, you know, that's not a headline that we're discussing, but you know, I'm sure that there's a headline out there that's like Bills secure their core captain of their defense in Terrell Bernard contract, right? Like that had to have been a headline. And I'm going to say milk on that one too, because if this is what this is, and I don't want to like, I don't know that you abandon him after the season, even as a post June 1 cut, you put the money in, but you definitely try to figure out what the heck about it made it look like he forgot how to play football. Because last year, his thing was instinctive play, interceptions, turnovers, forced fumbles, being around the ball all the time, having a great sense in coverage of squeezing routes and backing up into the passing zones. I don't know what is happening that he just seems to have forgotten how to do all of that. So, and I watched a couple of the games, all 22, with a specific eye toward, is it the huge shuffle of the defensive line? Is it Ed Oliver and Daquan Jones missing so much time? Players that he's come to be comfortable with in front of him on the because we've talked about on this pod so many times. Middle linebacker play it's boom or bust based on the big guys in front of you on the line. And it's not that. Like, it's not just that. I think that has some impact on it from game to game. But there are so many snaps where Deion Walker and, you know, Fedarian Mathis or some other player has been on the line in front of him and has not let anybody get to him. And he's still making the bad read. He's still making the bad call. He's still not where he's supposed to be in coverage. So, yeah, I don't know what's happening. And I think it's like milk. I'd love to give him a Paul Rudd and let him finish out the season to see what happens. But if he doesn't improve quickly, it's going to be a lost season and look like an absolute bust of a signing.
Yeah, I mean, that is the one out of all of these offseason re-signings right now that is looking the worst. And I know a lot of people are down on Christian Benford. I will say this about Benford. A, we know he's hurt. He's always struggled with injuries throughout the course of his career. So that aside, the Bills are asking him to do things that he's not really built to do, yeah, and he's holding his own with. They've never asked him prior to the season to shadow the number one wide receiver on an opposing team. He's shadowing a lot more mm-hmm. in a lot of games against the top pass catching target for an opposing squad. And the Buffalo Bills, they're playing more man defense, as we know. And Benford, while he can hold up okay in man, he can't hold up with that high of a volume playing man coverage while also shadowing the most athletic number one pass catcher for the opposing team. So he's been asked to play left-handed in service to the Bills trying to play more base and sell out to stop the run this season. I think Benford's explainable. I think Rousseau has hit his ceiling with this squad. He's always going to be an excellent run defending edge. He's just never going to be the guy that's going to get you 12 or 13 sacks in a season. Right. And I think as Bills Mafia, we've come to live with that. You gave the analogy about him. He is Robin, not Batman. We've got to find his Batman at some point, right? Yep. But yeah, Bernard looks like the worst one out of the bunch right now.
Bernard looks like the worst one of four bad signings.
Damn, man.
<Yeah. laughs>
I don't think the Benford one's that bad.
I mean, yeah, no, Benford's not great based on his play. Shakir is also not great based on his play. And then Rousseau is not great. So
we've got to talk about Shakir. I want to get through the game because it's fun. But we got to talk about Shakir and why it seems like he is only allowed to be targeted behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll talk about it when we get to the Bucks preview, but let's continue with our fun game here. All right, headline number three, JJ. This one comes from The Athletic, September 2nd, 2025. Kincaid unlikely to be a full-time player, i.e. his percentage of snap share at the tight end position will not be the majority of snap share.
I mean, it's milk, right? Because he became the core pass catcher in this entire offense. Like he is the most, or he's one of the highest targeted people. Unfortunately, Keon Coleman, I think, still leads all pass catchers in snap share.
Shakir passed him in the Miami game. Yeah.
They're still close, which is disgusting. Very to me close. Because Keon should not be seeing snaps. Except for, I mean, I guess he's an okay run blocker.
We're gonna get to him next.
But yeah, no, I this age like milk. Dalton Kincaid is, when healthy, ultimately super critical and should be getting most of the tight end snaps and has been seeing them even in two and three. Well, of course he's been seeing them in two and three tight end sets, but has been seeing them even on rundowns where he's an extra tight end in an 11 or 12 personnel set, and that's, you know, what you want to see is him available.
We're going to depart on this one. I'm actually going to say this is aged like fine wine. I think this take was spot on from a statistical standpoint, because at the time of his injury, JJ, Dalton Kincaid was playing just under 50% of total snaps available per game. I mean, we know the Buffalo Bills have been kind of slow rolling him. We know that they prefer Jackson Hawes in a lot of obvious run blocking situations. And as a result, Kincaid hasn't even really been on the field for a lot of these early down situations where the Bills are bringing out heavy sets and pounding the rock with James Cook. So if you take the article is in the true spirit of the article, which is Kincaid, not that he's not going to be a good player, is that he's not going to be a full-time player and surpass and take the majority of snaps in that tight end room. I do think that has held water.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's fair if you're going to just based on snap share. It was accurate for that.
It was absolutely.
His role in the offense, though, is way more important than I think that headline implies.
Yes, and his role in the offense too necessitates that when he returns from his most recent injury that ails him, the Bills are going to be tempted to slow roll him, but they need production from him immediately. And listen, Dawson, we all love Dawson Knox, but Dawson Knox does not bring to the pass catching game what Dalton Kincaid does. They need to drastically rethink Kincaid's usage should he come back healthy and ready to play at some point this season, because they just need him on the field. A guy, JJ, that you would probably argue we don't need on the field comes next here. Headline number four. This one comes from CBS Sports from September 7th, 2025. Let's just enjoy this one. Why Keon Coleman was Dave Richards' breakout sleeper of 2025 and what his massive week one means moving forward. JJ, do you do so? This is wine for you. I'm gonna
no,
say.
This is disgusting. This milk is so curdled that you can turn the jug upside down and nothing moves. Like, it is so sour and soiled. He is a breakout nothing. Like, he is terrible at football. And I'm tired of Josh Allen trying to force the ball to him. And I'm so sick of him. And I just wish they would have traded him at the deadline. And I don't care. I don't think he's going to redeem himself. He's got a shit attitude and worse play. Like, what do you want from me?
Oh, man. All right. You make a strong case. And I'm scared to say anything different. This is definitely not a wine case here. But I'm going to say Paul Rudd. Because I do think I just think we need a little bit more time on this one to find out how, in fact, it is going to age. I feel like we've had this dialogue, and we don't need to dive more into the Keon discourse, but I feel like we've had this dialogue over the course of our last two or three pods. I mean, I went back and reviewed some of our old clips. Keon has been a prop bet for us for the past, I think, three podcasts. Mm-hmm. Most notably last one where I lost a Buffalo bottle of Buffalo Trace to you, which sucks, but I will make do on that. Right. I think he is sharp as hell when it comes to his football IQ. We all saw that last year. I think he knows what he needs to be doing in the position that he is. And I think he is actually taking on an undue amount of guilt for his poor play that's not coming through. And a lot of his communication via the media and through the press. And I do think it's starting to show up in his effort on the field too, that overall frustration with his play. He bears part of the blame for it, JJ, but so does this coaching staff for putting him in a position that forget me and you who podcast from our living rooms, right? Anyone, Matt Harmon, the reception perception guy, right? PFF. And all the great statisticians they have there, Mel Kiper, all the Todd McShay, everybody. The book on this kid coming out of college was that he was a big power slot, and that he didn't have the route tree yet. He didn't have the ball skills, the separation ability, the ability to get off press that you need to be on X Island for your particular team. Everybody knew it, and the Bills have forced him into this role, and I think it is. Stunted his development, but I also think too it just hasn't done the kid any favors with regard to contributing to the success of this team, because they're putting him in a role that it seemed like everybody but them understood he wasn't going to be successful in.
Okay.
we're going to talk about this in the Tampa Bay preview, or at least I'm going to talk about this.
You can
right?
cut that. You can cut that clip, because that was my moment. That was my impersonation of Josh Allen. When at the press conference last year, they were like, yeah, the offense is broken and blah, blah, blah. How do you feel? And he was just like, okay.
Oh, yeah. When someone said this, this doesn't look like a championship offense.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and that's all I have. That's all I have for that. Because it's like, yeah, like we've had that conversation. But at some point in time, you are being put in a position that the coaches believe you can win in, and you are not winning in it. And I get that some of that fault might land on them because you're just not built for that success. Sure. But like, I don't know what to tell you, bro. Like, you got drafted to be an X, and you probably at some point in that pre-draft process in the interview with your team said you believed you could do that. And then in practice every day, you're in that role repping it, and you still completely bungle every big moment, and you're never in the right position, and you literally get bodied and pushed out of bounds. So you're no longer a viable passing option. Like, you're a huge body, strong receiver. That's supposed to be your game. I'm so tired of watching 5'11 corners push him so he steps out of bounds and then he can no longer catch the ball. Like, whatever.
Now, I have no counterpoint to that at all. I mean, in the Miami game, he was matched up against a corner that was of equal size to him for the most part. But again, fourth string corner, you're a top 35 pick in your draft class. you're supposed to be the number one wideout on this team. I totally get that frustration. And he does constantly lose jump balls and physical matchups to smaller DBs that are not athletically as gifted as him, but operate with better technique.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, when he plays against people who are athletic mismatches, he doesn't look like he's a better athlete. And that's all I need to know about it.
Paul Rudd. This is Paul Rudd for me. All right, I this is Paul Rudd.
I'm calling it Milk. You can call it Rudd.
All right. I'm definitely going Paul Rudd on this one. All right. Last one. JJ, this one was kind of fun because we are fans, as you know, and we often have, literally have a segment called Prediction Sure to Go Wrong. So I thought it'd be fun to get some fan takes in this one. So this headline is from profootballnetwork.com. This is just after the James Cook signing. Headline, he got overpaid, in quotation marks. Fans react to the James Cook signing. Some other fan reactions that I found in this article, JJ, quote, $12 million for a non-game changing running back, end quote. Quote, $12 million when the Bills had all the leverage isn't ideal, end quote. And then the last one, quote, way overpaid. Do not draft James Cook early in your fantasy drafts, end quote. That last one's probably going to sting for a lot of people if they followed that advice. JJ, I think we're both going to be on the same page with the one. Where are you at?
Oh, this is spoiled milk. Like, this James Cook is
hard milk.
He is a top three. Yeah, he's a top three running back in the league. I was not expecting this level of step up in his game. He has looked more elusive, more physical, more like somehow has more juice to break and breakaway speed. When the blocking is right and the teams are not absolutely selling out to stop him and stuff in the box with nine players, he's every bit of the running back you can build the franchise around.
Yeah, 100%.
He is Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, you know, that type of back.
Absolutely. No, I think he definitely is earning his way into those conversations for sure. Again, I think the only piece of James's game that we want to see develop a little bit more, and I actually think it exists, is just about the coaching staff trusting him. I'd like to see him in on more third downs. I know his touch rate way outpacing last year for total touches of what they think he can handle, but man, they need him on the field in some of these third down situations. Like, it's gotten to the point where when Ray Davis is on the field or when Ty Johnson's on the field, the other team kind of knows what is coming. I don't think Cook is the liability we think he is in pass pro, but even if he is, right, I have no problem using James Cook as another blitz beater option on some of these third and obvious passing downs to leak him right into the flat or something like that. I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs literally, in the absence of a running game, have done that for years under Andy Reid. I don't know why we can't fold James Cook into the similar type of philosophy and scheme.
Yeah. Well, I just the fact that he's not utilized in the short passing game at all.
Just, like, crazy.
He had he's had four targets this season. Like,
I'm gonna look that up.
Yeah, look that up.
I'm gonna look that up. If that's true,
because he was not targeted in the passing game for 3 weeks when the Bills went on their 2-game loss skid.
I will, JJ, that's gonna infuriate me if that is in fact the case. All right, you keep talking about stuff.
No, I'll just continue on that note. Is that the number of times we've talked in this pod about the opponents having weak linebackers or weak safeties and tight ends and running backs being targeted in the short middle of the field as a tactic being ideal, and then the Bills just Joe Brady just refuses to do that. And it's not even like he's throwing it to other running backs. They're not throwing to any running backs. And then, you know, you have Kincaid, who for some reason they believe can only be targeted 20 or more yards downfield. And Knox, who usually drops passes when we most need him to not drop them, creates a situation where it just seems like they're putting the wrong players in the wrong positions and the wrong times at the wrong depth of target. And it's really frustrating. And we'll definitely get into that, because I know that that's one of the talking points you have for the Bucks preview is, you know, how the Bills offense needs to evolve.
Yes.
If it can. And in one of those ways it needs to evolve is to figure out a more creative short passing game, not just these weird outside whip screens that teams can scheme the Bills into forcing the issue to make the Bills throw.
100%. All right. I've got, so he has had 20 targets this year, through. I mean, that's still not good. That's like two targets a game.
Yeah.
And he's had 18 receptions. So he's averaged two receptions per game over the course of the first nine games of the Buffalo Bills season here, which JJ sadly is exactly on track with how he's been used in the passing game for the entirety of his career.
No. So like what, Keon Coleman's getting an average of six targets per game.
I know what you're saying.
I want James Cook to have four of those. Like those numbers should be flipped.
I mean, can we give him some of the like Shakir behind the line of scrimmage stuff, like Shakir in the flat type? Like, can we give him some of those and use Shakir more in the intermediate routes? You know, let's get into the preview because I want to start it with the passing game. That's the thing that I think we've been fixated on the most, right? So let's talk about this Bucks preview. Buffalo Bills have a very, very important game coming up against the Bucks, JJ. I still think there's runway for a wild card for them, even if they drop this game. But this game is still no less pivotal to me because I want to see two things out of them. I want to see evolution. I want to see this scheme, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, change and adapt for the personnel that they have and to answer some of what opposing teams are rolling out there against. So I want to see evolution and I want to see edge, man. This team has not played with an edge in a very, very long time. They are, to a large extent, one of the more physical teams when you look at the way they're built, how their four-man pass rush is so vicious this season on the defensive side, and how the offensive line are absolute maulers in the run game. For a team that plays with that kind of physicality, they don't play with a ton of edge. There are times where as a unit, they look lost. And then I'm really getting tired in these post-game press conferences of seeing McDermott being like, yeah, man, we should be able to pass the ball with our MVP QB. I can't figure out why. And seeing Josh just so dejected. I want them to bubble up and show some of the anger and the edge and the fire that they have shown when their backs have been against this corner or backs against this wall in previous seasons to this. I want to see some of that.
For me, it's win with evolution. Messy win looking like the same abysmal up and down team, and then loss with evolution. Like, that's the way I rank those outcomes.
Without a doubt.
The win for me matters most, even if it doesn't look great. I know Bills Mafia likes to, you know, watch the Bills stumble and look sloppy to a 10-point win and then complain all week as if they just lost, you know, an AFC championship game. I'm fine with those. I'm like, all right, move on to next week. Let's see what you got. If you got out of the game healthy with the W, whatever. Some of the guys I'm on like a fan's friend chat with have said it a few times recently that like they just want to see a team that looks championship caliber, that looks prepared, coached, like they know what they're doing, that they come out and play consistent from the first whistle to the last whistle and are in control and look like the type of team that we believe the Bills are and that most early preseason, bettors and talking heads in the media would have said they were, which is a contender for a championship. Right now they look like a pretender and they recently were named as a pretender in, I think, ESPN. Somebody wrote an article that the Bills are a pretender franchise. And so they need to look way better if they want to lose that reputation.
But they have also had a loss to a Tampa Bay team in recent history that ended up spurring them on to one of their dramatic late season runs. And I wouldn't mind some of that mojo again this year. The last time they played the Bucs with their backs against the wall to this level was 2021 against the Tom Brady led Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That was the OT game where Josh just went off in the second half, ran all over the Bucs, throw all over the Bucs in a losing effort. But that then set the tone for the remainder of the back half of that season and the Bills found their way into the playoffs, right?
They found their way to another agonizing defeat at the hands of the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, that's that's why I don't care. Like, that's why I'm just like, nah, I don't care how we get there. Like, it's only going to matter when it looks like it's supposed to in the playoffs.
All right, let's get into some of the specifics of this game, JJ. You want to start with the offensive side or defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, let's start with the offense because we need to talk about how Khalil Shakir is only a screen target, how Keon Coleman somehow frustratingly gets targeted on third and long when he has not proven he can do that ever. and how they don't throw to running backs.
Let's talk about Shakir. I want to talk about him first.
All right. Before we get into that, because we were just talking about the Patriots, I keep glancing up. I have the Patriots Jets game on in the background. Mm-hmm. Drake May was just under severe pressure from the Jets. He's already been sacked a few times, and he had a perfect opportunity to dump the ball down to Henderson with no one around him because, and this is why, it turned a second and 10 into a first down. Because he is such a good thrower of the deep ball and they have such good deep routes dialed up for him that the team that they're playing against, the Jets, who are, you know, not very good, weren't able to keep anybody up close to the line, and they had to give a cushion underneath because they were afraid of the 20 plus yard pass. That's so sad to watch this and know how the Bills play football. And that Josh Allen doesn't even have those short dump downs available because everyone's crowding up because they're like, you're not going to beat us over the top. Either A, your wide receivers can't get there, or B, you're so inaccurate throwing past 20 yards that you're never going to hit one. Like, what happened? Ah, let's go ahead. Take it from there. Why doesn't Josh Allen throw a deep ball? Go, Dan.
Why doesn't Josh Allen throw a deep ball? And this brings me back to the Khalil Shakir piece. The data says that he is running those intermediate routes. When you look on film, especially because the Bills are facing man coverage at the rate that they are, he's not uncovering from one-on-one coverage, right? He is not as adept at finding some of those soft spots in the intermediate zone as he is to the zone closer to the line of scrimmage. I'm not saying he can't do that. I'm saying right now, because the way this wide receiver room is constructed and because he is usually playing in the assembly of wide receivers that he is, no one needs to dedicate resources to another area that would make him better, make him more available in the intermediate parts of the field. Like, teams feel pretty comfortable deploying the bare minimum around us resources, each level of our passing concepts, to the point where you can't take advantage of a guy like Shakir. I know we all trashed the Amari Cooper trade in hindsight last year, JJ, because from a production standpoint, we just didn't get what we wanted out of him. But we tend to forget that before he went down with that wrist injury, teams had to respect Amari Cooper like he was the old Amari Cooper, and it opened things up tremendously for the rest of this wide receiver room. And Khalil Shakir had some of his best individual receiving games when Amari Cooper was on the squad. They're lacking that element, that big threat, because Shakir's never going to be that. For as good as he is, he's never going to fully be Amon-Ra St. Brown, right? He's not going to be the big threat. He needs that alpha target to help take away some of those resources from the parts of the field he likes to exploit so we can better maximize his route trees. I think that's the problem with Shakir, is that is an individual matchup winner in the intermediate part of the field, be it man or be it zone. He's just not the type of guy who's going to be able to win on his own in that way. So the Buffalo Bills use his yak ability and they play him closer to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. And it just feels like this is, I'm sorry, I'm like negative Bills Mafia right now. It just feels like this
really
is.
Really are.
Yeah, I'm in a dark place. I never really need them to win. I need
you
a win
really
here, Dan.
Need this, man.
But that's like, that's just the common theme. That is like the repeating trope of this Bills team, is the players that they have and the players they reward are role players. They don't have those A1 alpha dog players other than Josh Allen and James Cook. Maybe end of list, right? Like, they just don't got them. Like, Greg Rousseau cannot do it alone. He needs somebody who's better than him opposite him. Khalil Shakir cannot do it alone. He needs someone better than him opposite him. On defense, Terrell Bernard cannot do it alone. He needs huge, excellent defensive lineman to keep him clean for him to have a good look at it, or he seems to be completely ineffective. Cole Bishop cannot be the best safety on the field. He needs somebody strong, a strong, you know, guiding presence as a veteran like Jordan Poyer out there, or somebody speedy like Hancock out there to assist. Like, that just, it just this repeating over and over trope of Khalil Shakir can't get it done because somebody needs to take coverage away from him. And like that, we just gave him, you know, top 15 in the league money at wide receiver, and he can't do anything on his own.
No, I listen, I get your frustration. But it goes back to less of the fault of the individual players and even less of the fault of Brady, and back to this roster build. I will say, though, on a positive end of things, the Bills are literally, it feels like, one piece away from being able to unlock the remainder of the potential in this wide receiver room. I don't think that person is necessarily Gabe Davis, who I think is going to play in this game. And that'll segue us to kind of our next piece of this. With Dalton Kincaid out, though, I do think the positioning of Gabe Davis would allow for some interesting things to happen schematically for this wide receiver room that may be a creative way to unlock some of what they can potentially do. Dalton Kincaid is not playing in this game, JJ, or I doubt he's going to play in this game. They have listed him as week to week, and they have, if history is any indicator, they're going to be very careful with how they handle him. Mm-hmm. Gabe Davis has played the tight end position. I use air quotes when I say that. He's played that tight end position in the absence of Kincaid before in some of their heavier slots. We know he's an A-plus run blocker. I actually think if we see Gabe Davis rolled out there, of course, then I'm going to be surprised. I shouldn't be surprised when this doesn't happen. But if we see Gabe Davis rolled out there, I actually think it's more in the Kincaid role. In 13 personnel, he all of a sudden is the guy in motion to uncover man or zone pre-snap for Josh. And I think it adds the ability to do some different things passing-wise out of that particular set and that particular formation. If you can get Khalil Shakir in a Z position or even the X position, but in a condensed formation, and you put Gabe Davis in motion, and you've got Shakir playing next to either Davis or Dawson Knox, you've got the ability to throw a big body in front of Shakir right off the line of scrimmage, to run a little bit of a pick route for him and get him free early off the line of scrimmage. And that might be the key to opening up some of these deeper parts of the field for him out of those heavier sets.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with you.
I could tell you're like, but they're not going to do it because they suck at their jobs.
Well, that's, I mean, it's so hard. It's so hard to believe that they're going to do anything that we know they should do because they just don't. And like, I understand completely everyone who's like, why don't they do 50% play action? It's so effective. It's, I mean, there's probably a big part of it that Josh Allen doesn't like it. Elite quarterbacks from time immemorial have not liked play action pass plays, right? Like
Joe Burrow refuses. Right. He'll never play under center.
Joe Burrow refuses. You know, Ben Roethlisberger hated them. Brett Favre was like, I'm not doing that, right? Like it's a thing about being an elite, you know, passer of the ball that you don't want to turn your back to the defense. You want to keep a good picture. You want to, and it sucks because it's like, dude, just look at the success you have when you do it. But for whatever reason, they don't. And so that may be one thing. Players get to choose two. And then for two, I don't understand why they're not using bunch sets. You have a bunch of players who cannot win one-on-one off the line, who have terrible releases. Why aren't you confusing the DBs? Why aren't you using more creative formations to make the defensive backfield communicate? Because you might get a busted coverage or something, right?
They did this last year, those dirty quad bunch sets, man.
It's like they don't have Mac Hollins, so now they can't do that anymore? I don't understand.
Hey, Mac Hollins is balling out for New England.
No, I love him. That's what I'm saying. Is like, yeah. You don't have Mac Hollins, and now you can't do these things? What's your problem? Yeah, so I agree completely. That's the best way to get him free in space. I just don't think they're going to do it. Like, that's why, you know.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Bills Mafia. Until they prove me wrong, I'm so out on this team. Like, and dear I'd love Lord. To be wrong. I'd love for them to finally get a championship this year. And maybe be like, wow, I doubted them the whole way. But I'm really like, I've never been more in the like, all right, let's wash our hands of this, fire everybody and start over camp.
Oh, man. You
that's a whole other that's a whole other topic. We don't have to get into that one right now.
That's a whole other topic that I do think. I do think even people in the let's not fire McDermott camp are starting to come more and more into. Because, I mean, let's be realistic. What does it feel like the ceiling of this team is this year? They get into the playoffs, sure, but they regress and they're out in the wild card round. You know what I mean? Like, I do think that is a conversation for another time, without a doubt. Okay.
Let's just.
Do you just want to talk about defense because you're so out on this offense?
Yeah. Yeah, because like, please, no, bring up the more of the things that, you know, you put out on our socials that you think could evolve the offense, because I think that's important.
I'm scared right now.
Because I'm just going to be like, I'm just like make an angry buzzer noise from like a game show. Like, that's not going to work. They're never going to do it.
So I think I'm going to gently present this idea to you. We have been advocating for more tempo to the offense. And in the Miami game, the Buffalo Bills offense and the passing game in particular looked its most in rhythm when they were in that 4-minute offense at the end of the first half. We have vented our frustrations that this team doesn't play with more tempo, but a team like Tampa Bay that loves to sub in and rotate their defensive line, particularly at the edge position where they're still trying to find some answers there and they're a little banged up, is a very efficient pass coverage unit. They've got some legit studs out there, but they have been susceptible to the quick game. Do we see the Buffalo, but then the quick game and playing with tempo aren't necessarily married to each other, but do we see more schemed up quick game? And do we see the Bills play with a little bit more tempo here, JJ, to keep the Buccaneers off kilter? Because this has been their Achilles heel versus teams that they have played.
That would require the Bills coaching staff to actually use strategies that take advantage of another team's weaknesses.
I'm going to stop asking you questions. Yeah,
I think that you're absolutely right. That is a way to victory for this team. I think that it's exactly the kind of thing that we would hope they would use. And we've both seen Josh Allen look more comfortable with tempo, with pace, with the ability to kind of get in a groove. And I mean, yes, like I'd definitely hope for that. I hope that Joe Brady is seeing the same thing we're seeing, which is that this Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense likes to have a lot of time before a snap. They like to get their guys kind of lined up where they need to get them lined up, specifically because they like to do some exotic twists and stunts.
Uh-huh.
And that's a communication aspect that's harder to do when the Buffalo Bills are rolling, right? Like you use like usually that's the first thing to go in a defensive scheme. As an offense is kind of piling down the field on you, you just start playing straight up because you don't have time to figure out who's looping or who's crashing. And so, you know, I very much hope that they pull this, you know, pull that together as a tactic. And I think that it's, you know, I think there's a lot of people in the fan base that would say like, oh, we think, you know, maybe Sean McDermott wanting to cover up his defense a little bit is trying to get Joe Brady to play a slower form of offense, trying to get him to plod and play the long 12, 15 play drive, shorten the game, that sort of thing. I don't know how much of that is true. Like, I don't know if he's meddling to that level. I just think it's been a choice and selection thing. I think Joe Brady is mindful of being a good partner to his defense, and complimentary football is definitely preached to the whole coaching staff. And we know that if they throw it three times in quick succession and get out after 9 seconds come off the play clock, that puts your defense in a pickle, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. I don't think McDermott is meddling to that point.
I don't think so.
I think defenses are dictating some of that, to as we talked about, with the way they're guarding this wide receiver unit. I do think defenses are dictating some of that to the Bills more than anything else. And I mean, you know, Josh has shown a propensity over the past, I would say, season and a half to take what defenses are giving to him, which is usually just the check down stuff down below. But Josh is also really cognizant of game script, too. And he has been playing from behind more, I think, than he has in the past couple of seasons with the Buffalo Bills. And as a result of that, depending on where they are at in the game script against a lot of these teams, I saw it a ton in the Miami game. It looks like he's pressing, and I agree at times he is pressing, but I think there are times where I watch the film and I see, yeah, there's a check down available in the flat, but also there is a slot corner that's got zone eyes on that receiver. That's going to be a 3-yard gain on second down. They're going to be tackled immediately, which we saw a bunch in that Miami game,
right?
And it's going to be 3rd and 7. I do think in earlier downs, he is trying to be more aggressive so that they can avoid the 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8 that he knows they don't have a lot of answers for with this personnel and in this playbook, right? Yeah. So going back to the original point about quick game, with a team like Tampa Bay, not just allowing them not to set, But not getting so bogged down and calling out protections, because that's failed a lot too, particularly with Connor McGovern. I don't know what it is this year, but yeah. McGovern's checks at the line on protections have not hit right. And Josh, for whatever reason, is not overriding him from under center. I'm not saying that that stuff doesn't happen when you play with tempo, but I'm saying you can dictate that a lot more and play in better rhythm and dictate those situations better to the defense. And that would take some pressure off of this offensive line to constantly be right for 39 seconds before we snap the ball on where the pressure is coming from.
Yeah, and I'm wondering about that too. It's such a weird thing. There's a couple of those weird nuances for this team that we can't necessarily figure out. Why did Terrell Bernard forget how to play football? How is Connor McGovern regressed so much? What about his play has keyed defenses to know what his checks and calls are? Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like. It looks like, you know, someone's reading his pitches.
Uh-huh.
And it's made them wrong a number of times in key moments, and the Bills offense has paid the price. And so, yeah, it's one of those, it's yet another area. Like, this is the point in time, and this is me being hopeful and positive. This is the point in time for this Bills team to prove what they always say, which is every week is a chance to get better. Growth mentality, growth mindset, like improve on the things that we need to improve on as a team. Stay focused, you know, go 1-0 every week. All the things, all the little, you know, catchphrases they use. Get out there and show us, because I think that this is a good opportunity to do so.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. All right. Do you want to mercifully switch to the defensive side of the ball on this? Okay, yeah. Great. All right. So a couple of keys for me, JJ. Let anyone other than Ibuka beat you. Like, bracket the shit out of that guy. Even I saw Godwin's practicing. I don't know that he's going to be ready to go for this game, but even if he is ready to go, he has been on injured reserve for weeks at this point. Anybody but Ibuka. Let anybody but him beat you, because he right now, depending on the health of Godwin, he's the only guy that can really slash you with explosive plays. So bracket the hell out of him. Mm-hmm. Let Cade Otton beat you. If Sterling Shepard beats you, God bless that guy, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, like right? You've done it. Sterling, right. Thank you.
Right. Bracket their number one pass catcher, and then like heat up Baker. Like Baker's completion percentage drops a full 15 points down to 56%. When he is facing pressure of five or more pass rushers. So you've got to absolutely be aggressive and light him up. If you do sit back in zone, and this becomes even more problematic if Bucky Irving's going to play, but if you sit back in zone, he's going to dice you up the whole game.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing that, again, it's a chance for your defense to evolve. It's a chance for you to try to add some new wrinkles. Send Bernard is lost in coverage. Send him on blitzes. Like, he's quick enough to get there, right? Like, drop Rousseau into the middle zone. He's a condor, right? Like, he can throw an arm up into a passing lane if you need a minute, and do some simulated pressures and send, you know, Bernard right down the throat. Like, that's, do some different things. Try to get that guy some confidence, because I think that's the biggest problem. Mm-hmm. Is he's been playing with a mixed bag next to him. He's been injured. He's been in and out. He is not counting too much on his defensive secondary. Every time he's out there, it looks like he's second guessing who's got the route behind him and how close they're going to be. And that's part of the reason he's not squishing back onto those crossing routes over the middle and has been seeming lost in coverage. Just send him, you know, get Terrell Bernard in there on some things. I hope Taron Johnson plays, because I think that he does matter for this defense. Although I've liked seeing Cam Lewis.
He's been good. We don't lose a ton in run fits, and he's been better in coverage.
Been better in coverage. I still hope for Taron Johnson though. I mean, like, he was one of the best slot corners in the league last season.
He absolutely was, man. But us being a couple of guys of advanced age, 30 comes free fast.
Oh, yeah.
30 comes free fast. Like, And he's another guy that, because of his style of play and how aggressively he hits his run fits over the course of his career, he's also dealt with a lot of injury issues, some publicly known, I'm sure many that aren't. He does seem like a guy who, if he is on the back end of his career, that decline is going to come quick. So I am actually okay if Cam Lewis gets a majority of the snaps in this game.
Sure. Who would you like to see on the defensive line take a step in this one?
I mean, TJ Sanders looks like he's going to play. So I don't know if it's take a step, but let's see what you can do rolled out in a high leverage situation for this defensive line that is really hurting for depth at this point.
Yeah.
We all know that Deion Walker has been one of the success stories of this rookie class that Brandon Bean has brought in. I want to see TJ Sanders live up to his draft stock. I mean, we traded up for this guy. I think the skill set's there. Health has not allowed him to be functional for the squad. I want to see him come in and make an immediate impact against what is a pretty stout offensive line, particularly on the interior for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't see what he's got from that penetrating style of pass rush.
Yeah, no, this offensive line is pretty solid. Their tackles, Werfs and Goedeke, are very good. Interior defensive, but to your point, I think their interior offensive line for the Bucs is where their vulnerability is. Mm-hmm. That's where I think that you can make some hay. It's going to be much harder for the pass rushers on the outside.
Yeah, I do. I definitely think so too. If Bucky Irving plays in this game, I become a lot more worried about this offensive scheme. Mm. You know, it's interesting because the Buccaneers OC has gotten a lot of crap from Tampa Bay media that he's not doing a lot of play action. He's not doing a lot of pre-snap motion stuff. This is all stuff that the Buffalo Bills struggle with. But when you look at their splits on those things, when Bucky Irvin, because of how dynamic he is on the field, they're doing a lot more of those things because he's a more lateral threat than, like, I think it's Rashard White is their backup, right?
Rashard White, yeah.
He's got way more sideline to sideline versatility in that jet sweep game and all that kind of stuff than Sean Tucker has, right? I think third stringer out of Syracuse. So I think if Irving is in, I think misdirection and play action is probably back on the menu. We saw them try to roll that out with some pretty decent levels of success against New England last week, and that freed up some things in their run game and passing game for them. I think if Irving is back, they're going to spam the crap out of that stuff, and then that becomes a problem for this Bills defense that still does not handle those things well.
Yep. Just, I mean, worthwhile to look at the injury report right now. Bucky Irving was a limited participant both days this week so far. So
I hope he doesn't play. Right. Please wait a week.
I know.
But if he does, it's going to be interesting. Hassan Reddick didn't practice today, correct?
Right. Hassan Reddick didn't practice. Anthony Nelson, linebacker, did not practice, but it's just an illness.
Yeah.
Ben Bredesen, their starting guard, did not practice. Hamstring.
Yeah. Vita Vea is limited too, I think, but he's going to play.
Vita Vea is limited. Chris Godwin's limited. Antoine Winfield Jr. limited.
Those are rough.
Yeah.
That's almost as bad as our list.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, we had mostly full participants.
Yep.
Cam Lewis limited, Khalil Shakir limited, which, hey, this might be the Keon Coleman slot game if Shakir can't go.
Please. This is the thing for me. I want to see him there so bad because I'm like so out on him as an X receiver that like I just need to see what he looks like with an easier release. Like he could be amazing. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, yeah, we drafted him to be the X, but what we found was a solid above average slot receiver, power slot. That's fine. Let's keep looking for an X.
What is stopping us in 11 personnel from putting, if Palmer goes in this game, which it looks like he's going to go, our separation God and savior, Josh Palmer, what is stopping us from putting Josh Palmer in the X, Khalil Shakir, should he play in the Z, Gabe Davis in the Dalton Kincaid tight end role, and then Keon Coleman in the slot. What's wrong with that? Why can't we do that? Why can't we do that?
Why can't we try something else? Because what we've been trying doesn't work. Yeah. Fair.
Yeah. And then you've got, Palmer's a field stretcher. You know, Gabe Davis can stretch the seam from that tight end position. All of a sudden, the middle of the field looks really open for an intermediate inbreaker from Khalil Shakir or something closer to the line of scrimmage of Keon Coleman. And dude, listen, I know you hate him, but when he gets the ball in his hands, he makes stuff happen. The problem is him getting the ball in his hands.
I will not debate you on that. The problem is the whole operation of being a receiver in the NFL.
Everything that happens before that, right?
Yeah.
But if he gets the ball in his hands, man, he still makes stuff happen.
I like him as a runner with the ball in his hands. It just never gets there. I love how we were like, let's flip to the defense to close this thing out. And then immediately they're back on the offense. Because this, I think that we both
know. This Coleman thing hurts.
Well, and we both know the same thing about this team is that without a working offense, the defense will never work. Right? Like they're not built to close or change games. Mm-hmm. They are built to maintain.
Correct.
The running engine that is the offense.
Yes, the offense drives game script for this team. It has for the past few seasons. It has since Joe Brady honestly took over.
Yep.
Yeah, man. I have another Coleman thought, but I'm going to save it for another pod because I feel like this is going to be a debate that never ends.
And my voice is toast. Let's close this thing out.
Let's do this thing. Yeah. Predictions sure to go wrong, my friend. All right. So the line on this game is moved, but it favors Buffalo by 5.5. Vegas, shut up. Like this 5.5 spread. Right. Bills favored by 5.5 points. I hate you, Vegas. Over under on this game, 47.5. JJ, final score prediction.
I'm going to say Bucks 27, Bills 21.
Ooh,
I think they lose
this one. You're not this taking the Bills.
This is only the second time in the history of our podcasting together I've ever picked against the Bills.
I know. The only other time you did that was against the Chiefs.
Yep.
Okay. What makes you think that the Bills are going to drop this one?
Oh, because they just seem so sloppy. I think for me, it's the fact that the Bucks have a very good, I know that they have some injured players. They're trying to figure out their pass rush, but overall they have a solid, well-coached defense. And if they get an extra possession, they have enough of an offense to keep this out of the hands of the Bills.
Mm, okay.
Yep.
I am also picking the Bucks. I picked the Bucks preseason to win this game.
Yeah.
And this was always one that kind of troubled me on the schedule, kind of where it sat from the stretch of games that we are on right now. We've got Pittsburgh coming up. We've got the Texans coming up on a short week. And then we've got what is a looming important matchup against the New England Patriots. So where this game was situated, we have seen it this time of year against NFC opponents. The Buffalo Bills drop games exactly like this.
Yep.
So just based on recent history, I was like, the Bucks maybe squeak it out. So I've got Bucks 28, Bills 27. I think it's going to be a close one for sure, but I think the Bucks are going to take it. And I'm also taking, are we both taking the over on points on this thing?
We are.
Yep. We are. Okay. I think both of these offenses can find a way to score on these opposing defenses. Yep. I really do. All right, JJ, do you have a prop bet?
I have just one. Mm-hmm. Josh Allen, plus or minus, or over under 250 yards passing.
Oh, I would normally say that's easy money, but it's been a struggle, and it's been a real struggle with his ADOT, his average air yards per completion as well. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm gonna say under. I know he went for 300 against Miami, but they were playing from double digit score behind most of that game. I'm going to say under.
I'm also going to say under. Yep. Yeah. He seems to not, whether it's scheme, receivers, whatever it is, Dalton Kincaid's going to be out this game. I think it's going to be a struggle.
Do you think he is kind of like protesting this offense in his own way on the field?
He's quiet quitting.
Right. He's like, oh, you want to turn me into a five-step drop QB? Okay, here, I'm gonna chuck this thing downfield.
I don't know. It's something, though. There's something fishy, right? Like, he just doesn't seem interested in playing football. Mm-hmm. And if it's, I don't know if it's scheme, if it's like, he's Hollywood Josh now, which is what I've said a couple of times.
Oh, man. Are we at that stage of our Josh Allen doubt where it's he's doing too many commercials, Josh, and that's why he's not playing well?
It's not about the commercials, actually. I actually take it from a standpoint of his life fulfillment, that he is he got married. He's renowned. He's beloved across all media. And it's just a play. Like, what else does he? Of course, he wants a championship. But does he want a championship? He's got $250 million guaranteed. Like, is that important? I'm not saying he's the kind who gets paid and gives up, but he might be one of the kinds who's like, you know, he even said in an interview that Haley has taught him there's more to life than football, Dan.
Listen, man, him and Haley, as far as I'm concerned, are unimpeachable with their love of the Buffalo Bills. Yeah. All right. And what they want for this town and this team. Okay. I will have no Haley or Josh slander in my presence. But I will say this is how Josh was playing before Dorsey got fired. And Josh, while he did not do so publicly on the field, you could tell there were moments of real frustration that he was having with this offense. It looks a lot like it did before Dorsey got canned. Now, yes. I think Josh and Brady have a different relationship than Dorsey and Josh did. And I think whatever they're going to hash out, they're going to do it behind closed doors. And I think Brady is very well known for taking player feedback. Like, he pulls in the offensive line. He pulls in each of the positional groups to help build the game plan each week. What plays do you think are going to work? What plays do you don't? So, like, these players have skin in the game when it comes to what's being put out there on the field. I think Josh's frustrations, though, are kind of echoing where it was at with Dorsey. That's what I'm picking up on. I don't think it's life fulfillment necessarily.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's also Sean McDermott's effusive praise and support of Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator, which is the same thing he did 2 weeks before he fired.
Yeah.
Ken Dorsey. Yeah.
Kiss of death, right?
Yeah. He's absolutely our guy. We absolutely got his back. Like, you know, we'll figure this out. We trust him. You know, we trust his scheme.
I've got the Steelers game circled, man, because I think if the Bills drop this one and they drop that Steelers game, I think you could see some weird stuff happen.
Well, who would come? Like, who would? Joe Brady was an obvious, had been an offensive coordinator in the past.
Aaron Cromer's called plays before, man.
Ugh, I don't like that.
He wasn't bad at it. He wasn't terrible at it. I'm not, and to be clear, I'm not advocating for it. I am saying there is someone with more experience than Brady calling an NFL offense that has the ability to pick up that clipboard and call some plays.
Fair. Okay, fine.
Yep, and he has built, Crummer's built this run scheme. He's helped build this run scheme, right?
That's true.
And he was with McVay, who knows how to do a passing freaking game.
Well, this feels like the all the people who are like, Jim Kelly should come back and be the quarterback's coach, you know, feels like that kind of statement. But when you say Aaron Cromer just run, you know, can call plays, I just think of like Aaron Cromer running the run game and just turning the entire play calling over to Josh Allen for anything that's not a run.
What would be wrong with that? What would be wrong with that? What would be wrong with giving Josh a little bit of Aaron Rodgers freedom at this point? That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying too.
Play like with tempo.
Yeah. Do whatever you want. Just go out there and sling it.
Seriously, Josh, you know what? Josh just becomes the OC. That's what happens. Yeah.
OC on the field.
Yep. Absolutely. All right.
Doesn't even need a headset. Just for memory. Right. Yeah.
He just needs the longest wristband in history to wear. All right. I do have a prop for you. Okay. It's not Keon Coleman related at all.
Oh, thank God.
TJ Sanders, who you and I both really like coming into the preseason. I don't want to take a sack metric because I don't know that he's going to get one in this game, but I do want to go TFL. TJ Sanders, tackles for loss, over under 1.5 in this game.
TFL, 1.5. Wow, the Patriots are running it up. Not running it up, but they just scored again. So it's 21. It's going to be 21-7 here in a second.
What is that, in the third quarter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, the Patriots, listen, we'll talk about the Patriots. Yeah. That's a team with flaws, but no one on their schedule except maybe us in Baltimore will be able to exploit them. So
I'm gonna hit the hopium and say over on TJ Sanders tackles for loss.
Nice. I'm going to say over two.
Okay.
I think, especially if DaQuan Jones is fully healthy, and we've already seen Walker kind of step up. I'm very interested to see Walker and Sanders play next to each other and Walker's big gap sucking body open up some quick lanes for TJ to get in there quickly. So I'm going to say over.
Nice. All right.
Awesome. All right, man. Listen, man, I just hope you feel better. All right. No matter what happens. I hope you're feeling better after this game. And Bills Mafia, I hope you are feeling better no matter the outcome this weekend as well, after watching another Sunday of a 1 p.m. Bills kickoff. For all of you listening at home, as always, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.